today, it's a full moon. We've spoken earlier about each month, the sun and the moon, they have relations, intimate relations. That's the new moon. Sun, male principle, moon, female principle. They come together in the new moon, right together like this. And then whatever it is they produce, the fruit of their union is felt on the full moon. This is the full pregnancy or delivery or the fruit of the union. So that's tonight from that point of view. And then from that point forward, the moon begins to diminish in size. So this is considered to be a highly auspicious and favorable and blessed day today. And very, very good for spiritual practice. The moon is in Cancer in its own sign. The moon rules Cancer. The moon is the heart, the mind, the unconscious, the divine feminine, the mother, the mothering instinct, the divine mother. The moon is nurturing and love, tenderness, fulfilling of emotional needs, personal needs, compassion, empathy, sympathy, kindness, sensitivity, perception, intuition. All of these things is the moon. People with moon in Cancer, I have seen, tend to be wonderful mothers. Some of the best mothers walking the earth. Very loving. Sometimes moon in Cancer is too sensitive and takes on other people's emotional stuff. We don't want to do that now, do we? No. You can be sympathetic, then you must set up a boundary. You can't take on everybody's stuff. All right. Speaking of the mothers, there are, according to yoga philosophy, how many mothers are there? Seven. Seven mothers. Who are they? All of us. We are to recognize seven primary mothers. The wife of the king. Your king's not married. The wife of the guru is your mother. And the wife of a saintly person. In Sanskrit it would say Brahman, and Brahman is a saintly person or a guru figure or a priestly type of person. Wife of the priest. And then your own mother. Your wet nurse. Wet nurses aren't so common these days. Your nurse or your wet nurse. But back in the day, wet nurse would be, you know, she'd be part of the whole thing. Now that you have a nanny, but she doesn't offer the milk, I don't think. Wet nurse and the earth. The earth is a mother. And the cow. That's it. Mother, wet nurse, and the cow are in that category. So that goes back to, in India, cows are sacred. Why are they sacred? Because the Indians are a little bit, you know. No, because the cow is the symbol of motherhood. And symbols are very, very powerful. They have effect. When you're born, your mother is to nurse you. If she doesn't nurse you, the wet nurse nurses you. And then you're put on what? Cow's milk. Right? Before you can eat solids. Cow's milk. She's the mother. So the mother's never to be killed. Not good. Then the earth. Well, you know what we do to the earth. We rape her every chance we get. Have our way with her. So all that's coming round now, because you hadn't noticed. It's coming round. And that's what we're working up to with this 2012 idea. I'm going to do a presentation on that according to the Mayan calendar and the Vedic calendar one of these nights, and show you how it all sort of fits together. But that's where we're headed. Because of our self-undoing. So, those are the seven mothers. So, on this day, they recommend that we do an Abhisheka, which is a bathing ceremony for Vishnu or Krishna, who's God. We spoke last week about the fact that God or divine energy or God's energy can inhabit any form. So whether you accept this literally or figuratively or symbolically, fine. So we're going to do just a bit of a bathing ceremony for Krishna with a little bit of water. Do you have to do it? No, if you don't want to. What does it do? Well, according to Vedic understanding, it removes heaps of negative karmic reaction. Why? If you do... Well, let's take this word that is a very common word, especially in Christian theology, sin. So what is a sin supposed to be exactly? Well, we have a human nature and we have a divine nature. If we act according to our human nature, we're more often than not acting in accordance with the urges, needs, desires of the body. Right? And then we have a divine nature, which is the soul. We act in accordance with our divine nature. We're acting in accordance with higher nature. So the concept of sin is acting more in accordance with the divine, with the human nature. Not that it's bad in and of itself, unless it transgresses some kind of law. That's kind of how it would be presented in theology. But really, this is what it comes down to. For every action, there's a reaction. We all kind of can accept that. So if we do several negative actions that will create a reaction, right, then most of us might think, oh, okay, well, why don't I just do a positive action? I'll go help my neighbor lady buy her groceries or whatever you might want to do. I'll go serve at the soup kitchen, or I'll give something in charity, whatever it might be. So now I've done good action to counteract my negative action. So actually what you've done is you've created some negative karma. Now you've created some positive karma. Now your karmic bank balance, negative and positive, both are growing. Right? So that means what? That means you have to come back and get the results of the negative acts and the results of the positive acts. When you might say, it's not so bad. I'm going to get all these positive. If I do a little more positive than negative, it should work out pretty good for me in the long run. Correct. And you get another body. And you have to take birth again. Will you get a human body? Maybe. Maybe not. Just because you're a human now doesn't mean you get a human body next life. Not guaranteed. Depends. You may go up, you may go down. You may go to the heavenly worlds and get a higher body. The body of a god or an angelic, if you will, type of body. But here in the material world, everybody is subject to birth, death, old age, disease, suffering. Everybody. So, if you want to get away from all this, because the soul doesn't ultimately belong here, the soul is a fish out of water. So no matter how many nice arrangements you may make, ultimately happiness does not lie here. And no matter how happy you might be, you're going to lose it all anyway. And if you don't die, somebody close to you will die. That's inevitable. So this isn't the best place, ultimately, to be. So if we're generating positive karma, negative karma, guess what? See you back here next time. So we have to do things, acts, that do not generate karma. What? You nuts? How can you do that? Everything I do is going to generate karma. Anything you do for yourself will generate karma. Anything you do for others will generate karma. Anything you do for God will remove karma. That's how it works. So, why? Because in any fundamental religion, any of the main religions, people pray to God in what way, typically? It just says, I need this. I need two of these. I need one of these. I need this, by the way, this week. And I'm distressed, and take my distress away and help me to have this. It's about me, usually. Or, if I'm a little more magnanimous soul, if I'm more like a deva, I might pray for somebody else. Take so-and-so's cancer away, please. Which isn't a bad prayer. Flip side of that is so-and-so may need that cancer. Because there's something important for them to learn with the cancer. So, I understand this, the sympathy of wanting to have the person's cancer taken away, but how do we know? Maybe that's the best thing. So anyway, that's what people do. They pray for something. Man proposes, God disposes. Thank you very much. How many times do you pray to God and say, well, what can I do for you? And if you do that, then you are a very evolved soul. You are beyond Rakshasa, beyond Nara, beyond Deva. You're on your way out of here. So any little act that you may do for God's pleasure, in service to God, with an attitude of love or devotion, joy in the heart, will wipe out tons of karma. Yeah, if you can do it all day long, great. But how about just even a little bit? How about we just pour a little water and say that is my offering. I do this out of love and devotion for you. Just a little bath water. You know, hope you, it's not too cold. Negative sinful reactions, in other words, negative karmic reactions, can be like an entire field of dry grass. as far as the eye can see. And service to God is a little spark in that field. One little spark wipes out all the grass in the field, doesn't it? It's that kind of proportion. You can't really wrap your mind around and say, well, if I did 10 bad things, I got to do 10 things, 10 good things for people to offset. Well, okay, maybe when we're going back to the karmic bank balance. If I did 10 bad things, I could do one thing in loving service to God that'll wipe out the 10 bad things easily. So that's how it actually works, according to yoga philosophy. Okay. As you know, we like to learn and practice mantra. So, many stories. Throw the floor open here to any stories or experiences that anybody wants to share. Which one did we do last week? Om Namo Bhagavate?
Vishnu, yeah.
Vasudevaya, yeah. In older yugas or older eras or epochs, as I've mentioned, this is the Kali Yuga, this is the Iron Age, this is like the winter of the universe right now. This is where people's interest in spirituality is at its absolute lowest ebb. And if you don't believe me, go look at the billboards down the street and they'll tell you all about sex, drugs, and Guinness. And rock and roll, and Guinness, and Jameson, and, you know, whatever.
What's wrong with rock and roll?
Nothing. He's a musician, so I mean, interfering with his livelihood. So, there in previous ages, Brahmins or saintly persons or yogis or people who practice spirituality would be able to use mantras for many different things. To control the weather was not that big a deal, and they would even use them for, you know, consecrate weapons like an arrow, and use a mantra, consecrate the arrow with that mantra, shoot the arrow, then you get a rainstorm, or, you know, different things. Musicians back in those days would also be able to play certain ragas or musical forms, melodic forms, which are different from on their ascending and the descending part of the scale. And using those ragas, they would also be able to, just like we know nowadays, music creates moods and has an emotional effect on us, like military music or sentimental music or all kind, you know, different music, different things, meditative music. These are real effects. They can have very powerful effects on people. But they could with music and ragas, again, create different weather effects, all kinds of things back in the day. We sort of lost touch with that in the modern age. Okay, so we mentioned really briefly one time, in fact, I think you mentioned it, Patrick, a couple of weeks ago. According to Vedic understanding, in the creation, there are three predominant deities, personalities, and they are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And they are all in charge of one aspect. And the aspect is creation. There are three aspects. Creation, everything must come into being. Everything has an inception point, a starting point in the material world. Whereas the soul is considered to be eternal. When did the soul begin? Didn't. When did God begin? Didn't, by definition. In the material world, everything must have a starting point. That's creation. It's called Srishti in Sanskrit. In charge of Srishti or creation is Brahma. And that's a picture of Brahma on top there. Yeah, he's got four heads. All the better to create with. He has four heads and they're aimed in the four directions. Stiti, or once something comes into being, it remains for some time. So that is called maintenance or existence. Vishnu himself is in charge of that. Vishnu, as we've discussed, is God. And Vishnu means God who lives everywhere. But Vishnu multiplies himself or incarnates himself in another form of Vishnu simply to do maintenance, to look after things in the material world once things have come into being. He doesn't create them, strictly speaking. Well, I mean, ultimately he does, but he's there for maintenance. Then things come to an end, right? They come to an end, or they reach their point of fulfillment or whatever. They come to an end. Death, destruction, and that's Shiva's job. Shiva is in charge of wrapping things up and bringing them to an end. Vishnu is all God. Shiva is said to be three quarters God. And Brahma is not God. Brahma is a jiva. A jiva is a... anybody know what a jiva is? J-I-V-A. Sanskrit. The soul. You're all... we're all jivas. So, the position of Brahma, the creator, is a position that someone can be elevated to and can do that job, you know, like Taoiseach. You could be Taoiseach, and whoever's the Taoiseach, whoever, whatever his name is, then he's the Taoiseach. That's a position. So that means the Prime Minister or the President or whatever.
Different Brahmas for different universes,
different Brahmas for different ages, for different creations, for different manifestations. Yes. Yep. Correct. So, creation falls under the mode of passion, maintenance is the mode of goodness, and annihilation or dissolution is the mode of ignorance, according to the three modes of nature. We'll talk about that another time. So, let's look at this page here. Now, I've put a picture of Brahma the Creator. This is one we did from like a year ago. Brahma the Creator on top, because... the mantra is not a mantra to Brahma, because Brahma's not typically worshipped, because he's a jiva. He's not God. And the mantra is Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha. And you can say Swaha, or you can say Swaha, either. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha. And it means, I make an offering of love unto Krishna, the all-attractive personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the cows, and the beloved of the gopis, the milkmaids of Vrindavan. So that's what Krishna was busy doing when he was on earth 5,000 years ago. Now, before I start chanting the mantra, I'd like to read the benefits of chanting this mantra, so you'll get an idea how this fits in. Upon emerging from the lotus... Well, I guess I'm going to have to explain this to you. According to Vedic understanding, each universe is like an egg. At the bottom of the universe is a huge ocean, and that is, scientists love this one. At the bottom of the universe is a huge ocean, and who lies on that ocean is Vishnu, Mahavishnu, the great Vishnu. And Vishnu lies down on the serpent couch, which is the Sheshanaga, and which is a manifestation of Vishnu as well. And he goes into Yoga Nidra, a mystic sleep. And while he's in this mystic sleep, he dreams. And while he dreams, out from his pores come all the universes, like little bubbles from his pores. And then he enters into each universe, and there's water at the ocean at the bottom of the universe, and then he does the same thing in each of the universes, like I just described. And then from his navel, from his umbilicus, a lotus stalk comes at the top, the lotus flower opens, Brahma appears. Seated on this lotus flower. What's Brahma see? Nothing. Nothing there. Dark. So from within his heart, he gets inspired to create. And the first two syllables that Brahma hears, because in the beginning was the word, No, it wasn't Om. No. This is before Om. The first two syllables were tapa, tapa, which means spiritual practice. Meditate, do some practice, do some penance, do some meditation. So he goes into meditation and he meditates for some, you know, 1,000 years, as you would.
As you do.
And he realizes what his job is, which is to create the entire universe of all its various bits and pieces, all the different variety in the universe. It's different than the Big Bang, I know that, but that's the Vedic version. And the mantra that Brahma uses, or that comes to him while he meditates, is this mantra. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha. That is like the Kama Gayatri. So, the benefits of chanting this mantra. Upon emerging from the lotus, which sprung from the navel of Vishnu, Brahma, the creator, who was guided from within by divine inspiration, turned his mind to the creation under the impulse of previous impressions. But he could see nothing but darkness in every direction. Brahma's impulse for creation arises solely from the impressions recorded in his previous birth. All souls, or jivas, derive their nature from the impressions recorded from their previous births, and this affords them a starting point at which to begin their new life. How many times have we said, the last thing you remember at death will determine your next life? Guaranteed. So that's why one practices spiritual practice throughout the life and conditions the mind in the proper way, Because if you think at the time of death, which is a fairly scary time for most people, especially as they lose control of the different bodily functions, right? If you think you're going to be calm, cool, and collected and meditate on the right thing, good luck without some practice. Okay? So, this is the result of their activities in previous lifetimes. So too, it is the same for the creator Brahma. The position of creator within a universe is a position that a qualified soul can attain by virtue of his pious and saintly activities over a period of lifetimes. Brahma saw nothing but darkness in all directions. He knew he had to create diversity within the universe, but he did not know how he would do this. Then his consort, Saraswati, the goddess of learning, said to him, quote, "By this mantra, all of your desires shall be fulfilled, O Brahma. This mantra will bring you direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and from this all your desires shall be fulfilled." End quote. This mantra has a twofold purpose. For a person who is still focused on fulfilling material desires, this mantra is the supreme mantra for creative fulfillment and realization. For a pure soul who no longer strives for the fulfillment of any material desires, this mantra will bring him or her into direct contact with Vishnu, the formal form of God, or Krishna, the familiar form of God, and he will be able to transcend samsara, or the wheel of repeated birth and death. He will be awarded an eternal place in the spiritual world with Krishna or Vishnu. Depends what you want. What we've done here since we started our meditation group is we've done or used or introduced mantras that will help you materially and spiritually, both. Very few of us are on a level of pure self, which means no desire. No material desire. No desire connected with the body. So, if any of you are on that level, wonderful. Great. So, this is a mantra that can be used for purely spiritual purposes. But if you're not on that level and you're trying to create something, you want to create something beautiful, distinctive, unique, impactful, that will reflect your essence, that will change others, that will shift others' consciousness when they see or experience what you've created, you're welcome. Because here it is. You should seriously invest in time in this mantra. With this mantra, Brahma created the diversity in the universe. Now that's somewhat impressive. I mean, come on, a sunset. That in itself, what to speak of everything else. So, it's awesome. It's awesome. All right, so shall we? Kling. Now, kling is a bija mantra. It's a seed mantra. Now, I know it says klim, but you see the pronunciation underneath is kling. So you don't say kling. You say kling, like a nasal, you know, kling. Kling is a bija mantra that expresses love. Love and creativity. Pretty good. So, you know, if you're looking for a mate, and you're in a shop, and there she is, or there he is, you might just walk around going, No, silently. You say it out loud, I don't know if you'll impress her. She might be on to the guards before long. Cling, cling. Cling. You're in good form tonight. So, I say that half jokingly, but who knows? All right. Cling. Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopijana, Vallabhaya, Swaha. Kling Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopijana, Vallabhaya, Swaha. Okay, now we'll do the whole thing. Kling Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Vallabhaya Swaha. 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 All right. I urge you to work with this mantra. I myself have been chanting this mantra pretty much daily now for about 2 years, 2.5 years, I think. And I get creative inspiration all the time. I mean, a lot of it comes to me. It seems to be a pretty steady flow, you know. So that's my experience with it. Okay, should we start the meditation now, or should I tell a little bit about the three modes? It's 9:20. What's your feeling? What's the consensus? Should we go right into the meditation now, and that way we'll wrap it up in about 15-20 minutes?
Do the three modes.
Hmm? Or should I talk a little bit about the three modes of nature? Okay, we'll talk a little bit about the three modes of nature. There's a fundamental philosophical understanding that we find in the Bhagavad Gita, which is probably right behind me someplace. So, the Bhagavad Gita was the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna that took place 5,000 years ago on the battlefield, before a battle, in India. Krishna is God. Arjuna was a prince. And it's really the essence of yoga. It's yoga philosophy, how to link with God, how to link with your divine nature, how to link with your spirit, your spiritual nature, however you want to say it, how to link with the soul. And it tells you in great detail what that means. So that, you know, kind of everything is is there. This is the book that has had the greatest impact in my entire life. I read this book at first at 1972. The first time I read it. And I read it, I don't know, 50, 60 times. I'm still trying to understand it. Because it's God talking. And how do you know it's God talking? Because humans, they don't talk like this. And it's all in Sanskrit poetry. Humans don't speak in Sanskrit poetry. If you've studied Sanskrit, I've studied Sanskrit. Sanskrit poetry is not easy. You know, it's not that like English poetry or Irish poetry. Anyway, one of the concepts in this book that you will see played out before your eyes all day long, every day, and which is an absolutely necessary and fundamental understanding, is the three modes of nature. Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, or goodness, passion, and ignorance, or contentment, desire, and delusion. Everything that is taking place and unfolding in front of you is under the influence of these three modes. Or nothing escapes it. Once you understand the nature of these three modes, then you understand how things work here in the creation, in the material experience. If you were to go to Brahma Loka, the planet where Brahma, the creator, lives, you'd find the three modes, but mostly the higher modes. If you were to go down to hellish realms, you will find them there as well, but mostly the darker one, mode of ignorance. But this is everywhere in the creation. It's of great value to know this. Krishna tells Arjuna, if you understand the three modes, you don't have to come back again. He actually says that. There's no need for you to take another birth if you understand this. Because then you'll know where you fit into the scheme of things, in the larger picture. Okay. So, again, these fit with what we started out talking about, the constellations of Rakshasa, Nara, and Deva. They fit exactly. So let's take the vast majority of people. They are Nara, or humans. And they are in the mode of Rajas, passion, desire. Humans are running around trying to fulfill desires. And that's what they're doing all day long, every day, pretty much. And when you fulfill a desire or two, then they go away, right? No, they don't. They seemingly seem to multiply. You fulfill one or two, three or four more pop up. Have you noticed that at all? Desires are like rivers entering into the ocean. No matter how much water goes into the ocean, does it ever stop? No. So desires are endless. Material desires are endless. If you go do a particular material activity, then we get a taste for it, we become conditioned by it, then we can become addicted to it, and then we never want to stop doing it. Sex, drink, different things.
Shopping.
Eating sweets. Lots of things. Speaking critically. So desires tend to multiply, and desires that are connected to the body have no satiation in that. You might satisfy them for a time, and then tomorrow it'll start all over again. So humans are in the mode of passion, always running around looking for something. And the mode of passion or rajas conditions one to what they call desire and lamentation, because when desires aren't fulfilled, we become bummed out, we become sad, frustrated, sometimes even angry. Right. So is this a good state of mind to be in? No. You can imagine the amount of karmic reaction that is generated in that state of mind. And generally, who's at the center of rajas, of a desire-based nature? Self. But I need it. But I want it. Shopping is a great example. Because if I just go buy myself about 20 things today, I'm going to be really happy. 20 nice new pieces of clothing. That'll make me happy. And 3 days later?
I don't
need
anyone.
Yeah, not me. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. So, that's mode of passion. Mode of ignorance is destructive in nature, lazy, lethargic, deluded, mistaking one thing for another. When one is intoxicated, even though a person may be an intelligent person, when one is intoxicated, intoxication is of the nature of the mode of ignorance, tamas, darkness. Why? Because it steals intelligence and it steals the discretion. Who's ever done something under intoxication that they would never do if they weren't intoxicated? Anybody? You don't have to put up your hands. Dave said he never did. So, did you ever try to reason with a drunk? Good luck. And the next morning, I said what? I never said that. Yeah, you did. I have it on tape. You can't reason with somebody who's intoxicated. You cannot reason with somebody in the mode of ignorance. It's not possible. The mode of ignorance is also any kind of criminal activity that has as its fruit destruction of person or property. It's the mode of ignorance. Ultimately self. Any activity that destroys self, that compromises the temple of the body. Yeah, I know it's fun and it feels good. But ultimately, it's destructive in nature. That's the mode of ignorance. The mode of goodness is contentment, happiness, joy, knowledge, peace, compassion, understanding, empathy, charity. Enlightenment. That's the mode of goodness. Whatever you do that puts you into that state is the mode of goodness. what we are doing here or endeavoring to do is of the nature of the mode of goodness. But we're trying to take it a step further beyond the three modes of nature is where spirituality lies. Spirituality is not in the mode of goodness. It's beyond that. But in order to go to reach a true spiritual state of mind or of nature, the prerequisite is the mode of goodness. You have to go to the mode of goodness before you can transcend the three modes of nature. If there was a person here, no matter how nice a soul he would be, and he's sitting here right now, and he's just drunk, like this, he wouldn't fit here. I'm giving you an obvious example. He might be a good guy, he might be sitting there smiling, but it doesn't fit because it's a whole different mode of being. That's a stark example, but so there has to be a shared state. That's the mode of goodness. What we're also trying to do here is transcend the modes. If you do certain activities that put you in this state of mind of peacefulness, joy, self-satisfaction, satisfaction in the self, that is the mode of goodness. You could walk down our laneway. You would get that experience undoubtedly. You could come here, hopefully you would get it. You would do, maybe you would paint. Maybe you would sing. Maybe you would play music. Maybe you would dance. Maybe you would sew. It could be anything. Right? Maybe you would go to church on Sunday. I always felt really, really close to God as a little boy going to church on Sunday. When I was a kid, the confessionals had these little curtains, a little red curtain, and they were done so very ornate, carved wood. And I used to think that if you could, and of course I wasn't allowed in there, I was too small. And I thought that's where the stairway was that would lead up to heaven. If you went in there, they'd take the stairs up, and there'd be a big long wooden table, and all the apostles would be sitting there having, bread and wine and stuff. I always wanted to go there, but I found out later that's where you go for your sins. So that kind of burst my bubble a little bit, you know. So those are, in a nutshell, the three modes of nature. Food is in the three modes. Charity is in the three modes. Any action you do is governed by the three modes of nature. So what we typically would regard as charity is not always recommended. Like, for example, you might give a vagabond, or, well, let's just call him a drunk on the street corner, some money because you feel sorry for him. But then he's going to take that money, he's going to go buy himself whatever it is that makes him high. And that is considered to be charity in the mode of ignorance. And because it furthers an activity that is in the mode of ignorance. You see? So you're not actually getting benefit for that, according to yoga philosophy. So if you're going to give charity, you should give charity, not, you know, and again, the example I've given, I'm not going to get into this too long here right now. There's so many examples of all these things. We would save it for another time, but sometimes people have these big charity functions and, you know, everybody pays $1,000 like for the table, right? And they have a dinner and and they raise thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands or millions for the charity. And then everybody appears in the paper and the society pages. And this is Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. They donate this, they do this and that. That's charity in what mode?
Desire.
Why?
Because it's a desire to get known.
Correct. Are they giving charity? Yeah. Is that a good thing? Yeah. But they're doing it so everybody will see who they are. And they'll get recognized. So that means there's ego invested in it. Will they get some benefit for that? Yeah. They'll get some good karma. Which means they'll have to come back and enjoy that karma. It's not really the mode of goodness. If you gave charity in the mode of goodness, then you would give it to the right person or persons, and you wouldn't expect acknowledgement. Right? In yoga philosophy, if other beings die, then that is a mode of ignorance. Food in the mode of ignorance. If you're causing animals to give up their lives to feed you, then there's a negative reaction to that. Because it's destructive in nature. Yeah, food in the mode of goodness is vegetarian food. Like, for example, I mean, it's a known fact that it takes an entire acre of land to produce one hamburger patty. And all the cows that they have, all the cattle throughout the earth, and all the water that they use to water the cattle, and all the methane gas that's caused that goes into the ozone from all the cattle, and all the grain that is fed to the cattle so that people can get a cheap hamburger, is the most unsustainable type of use of management of land and resources there is. And they can't chop the forest down fast enough in the rainforest to make more land for more cattle. This is an unsustainable practice. And this is a fact. That's why a lot of people, they talk about greenhouse gases and this, but they never mention organized animal slaughter as being a major component and cause of that, which it is.
They don't want to give it up.
They don't want to give it up because there's an addiction to eating the meat. So what can you do if you're a meat eater and you're conditioned to eating meat? Maybe you could give up meat one day a week. Maybe you could do that. We were also taught since we were kids that we need a big whack of protein 3 times a day. Not so. We don't. So, maybe you could give up meat once a week. My absolute favorite food was hamburgers. I loved hamburgers. I gave those up in 1972. So that was my offering. Well, see, when you take animal husbandry, let's call it, like the natural form of looking after animals on a farm situation, and turn it into an industry, or turn it industrial, where they don't raise animals anymore, they grow them. How many animals do you grow here? grow, who God planted. We, Kalindi and I drove up the I-5 in California in August. We went from Los Angeles all the way up to Vancouver and back. And we drove and we stopped off on the way and see different people for different things. And we were in Hanford, California, which is right about the middle of California.
In the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere, kind of like desert area. And we drove along. It was August. It was summer. Very warm. And we had, you know, it was like 100 degrees. So, you know, 35 degrees. So we had the windows closed, naturally, and the AC on, as you would, listening to some tunes. And all of a sudden, there was a smell. Now, we've all driven past a farm. We know what a farm smells like. We know what a barn smells like. We know how cows smell, or horses. There's this smell, one of the most awful smells ever. We knew it was an animal smell, but we didn't know what it was. And then we went over this rise, and here were millions of cows on that side of the road. Because it went on, you know, like there were hills and stuff, and they were covered. There was not one blade of grass anywhere. It was dirt. It was all dirt. It was all shite, is what it was. Because, and this is your meat slaughter animals. You know, never seen that before. So, even for the purpose of reducing the greenhouse effect, give up meat once a week, one day a week if you can. That'd be good. Okay. On a brighter note, let's do some meditation. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Relax and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. Relax. High above, in the heavens, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, and into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. Alright. I want you to ask a question that you want the answer to. Make it a straightforward question, not too complicated. should I move to West Cork? Should I sell my house? Should I go into relationship with so-and-so? Should I take this job? Should I sell my car? Something simple. If you don't have a question, that's fine. Ask your question now, please. And now, clear your mind and relax. Completely clear your mind. Relax. Let go. Deeply, deeply relax and let go. All right. You're standing in front of a door. Look at the door. If you can see it, fine. If you cannot see it, then sense it. What shape is the door? Is it rectangular? Is it arched? What shape is it? Single door? Double door? What is the door made out of? Is the door in good condition or in poor condition? There is a single word on the door. What word is it? Don't choose the word, let the word appear. Now, open the door and step through. Where are you? Where are you? Where do you see yourself? What is this place? What's it like? What's happening there? How do you feel there? Continue with the meditation until you've completed all those steps. When you've completed the meditation, slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and that peace. And open your eyes. All right. Om Tat Sat. Thank you for coming. Next week, we're going to visit with Shiva. And we're going to learn the Mahamrityunjaya mantra. Now, the reason we're going to learn that one, and that one is to conquer death. Lazarus, arise. And why are we going to do that one next week? Because it's the 29th. Oh, wait, I'm thinking February, aren't I? Oh, boy, what am I? This is the leap year. We're doing it a month early. It's the 29th of January. This is a leap year. And Shiva's in charge of time. All-devouring time. So we're going to learn the Mahamrityunjaya mantra. I'll tell you some good stories about that mantra. And then you can go out and you can do one of two things. You can increase your lifespan, if you like, or you can raise people from the dead. Or you can jump off a building and test it out, if you like, but I will take no... I'll assume no responsibility for that, Patrick. Okay, so that's what we're going to do next week. Now, the following week, the following Tuesday, not next Tuesday, the following Tuesday, February 5th. 5th. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure. We will not be here. We will have no meditation that night. Okay? I apologize ahead of time. We will be in Munich. So, February 5th, we will not have a meditation.